This piece is called Taksim al-Oud, or improvisation on the oud. I think just about everyone pretty much knows that the oud is an Arabic instrument. And is the basic name of the European lute. Lute is a slight corruption of the word oud, a big sort of mandolin. Jalil Azouz began his professional career as a versatile instrumentalist and composer at the radio station Al-Sharq Al-Adna in Palestine. Like the couple, Sana and Amir Kadai, he traveled to North America to entertain the immigrant community and also stayed on for the rest of his life. Azouz eventually made his way to Detroit. Detroit, Michigan, where he has been an invaluable artistic leader there for over 50 years. Azouz has planned countless programs, rehearsed hundreds of musicians, taught many oud and violin players, and has continued to teach, practice, and perform long after his alleged retirement. This solo, Taksim in Maqam Nahawan, reveals the lucidity of his oud playing as well as his inventive musicianship. A word should also be written about Albert Rashid, whose Al-Sharq, or Orient record label, is featured here, because it is he who was primarily responsible for the transnational transfer of mass media between the old world and the new. Although not completely alone in his endeavor to provide cultural fodder for Arab immigrant communities, Rashid's efforts were perhaps the most earnest and enduring. Beginning in 1934, Albert Rashid, whose family still owns and operates Rashid Sales Company in Brooklyn, New York, imported musical films from Egypt, arranged for public showings, and then recorded with permission the hit songs off of the films and sold them as 78 RPM discs on his record label Al-Sharq. During a conversation in 1987, Rashid explained the process. Quote, "We managed to book a certain place, like the Brooklyn Academy of Music or the Detroit Institute of the Arts, or we would show them the films out in Los Angeles or San Francisco. Then from there, they'd go to Texas. Move them around. We had a limited number of places to show them, but we did show them in places where they had a population of Arabic-speaking people. We bought the rights to the films, and then from films, we bought the rights to the music, which we recorded on records." End quote. Again, that was Albert Rashid, 1987. During World War II, when commercial traffic between the United States and the Middle East was at a standstill, Rashid brought blank record discs over to Cairo, Egypt, to make recordings with musicians for the Arab-American market. He also recorded numerous Arab-American musicians at his Al-Sharq Orient label, both on the media of 78 and 35 RPM discs. That's cut number 12 from my personal favorite of the two Arabic music CDs that I have, the Music of Arab Americans Retrospective Collection. Rounder CD, Rounder Records Corporation, 1997. So this is a 15-year-old CD, and the information that I read is based upon that date of print. This is Mideast Madness. Salam alaikum. Shalom alaikum. In the name of peace and justice, on behalf of the Palestine-Israel Action Committee, which is part of Santa Cruz's own Resource Center for Nonviolence, I bid you greetings. My name is Lawrence Afif Tawil, though many know me as Ren. Larry will do in a pinch. I introduce myself as a California native from just over the hill, went to Campbell High School and West Valley Junior College, yet perhaps the most pertinent thing in regards to this airtime is that my father was a Palestinian Arab of Jerusalem, a Christian Arab who found himself displaced by the events of May 1948. Having lost all his possessions and the two businesses he and his brother owned back in Jerusalem and Haifa, and he could not return to his home and homeland. End of stock introduction. I'm going to give you phone numbers now. If you don't have a pen handy, or don't have the super kind of memory that some of us, well, that some people do have, relax. I will repeat the phone numbers. In the meantime, you can pick up your paper and pencil. Please call us. Call me, who is alone here in the studio. There is no call screening. You'll go right on the air on free radio. Area code 831-427-3772. That's 427-3772. And the other line directly to the studio is area code 831-469-3119. Area code 831 here in Santa Cruz County, California, USA. 469-3119 is the secondary phone line. One more thing before we begin in earnest. Please keep free radio on the air. Contribute as often and as much as you can. Contribute even a small amount if that's all you can. Once even. I pay my $20 a month to air my voice and this show. All programmers pay their dues. The rest is paid by you. We do not get massive grants or government funding. Please, as soon as possible. I really need a better filing system here. There it is. I had them all set up. Not in a place where I had immediate access to them. Please feel free to interrupt me anytime. Call those numbers I gave out. The Mediterranean Studies Forum presents David Wasserstein, Department of History, Vanderbilt University. He'll be giving a talk on Friday, October 12th. 12:15 to 1:30, titled, How Islam Saved the Jews. Again, this is David Wasserstein, apparent professor of the Department of History, Vanderbilt University. The talk will be given at Stanford University in Encina Hall West, room 208. The address is 616 Sarah Street. At Stanford University. How Islam Saved the Jews. Introductory comments. Here's the abstract. By the early 7th century, Judaism was in crisis. In the Mediterranean basin, it was battered by legal, social, and religious pressure, weak in numbers and culturally almost non-existent. It was also largely cut off from the Jewry of the Persian Empire in Babylon, present-day Iraq. The future seemed clear: extinction in the West, decline to obscurity in the East. Salvation came from Arabia. Islam conquered the entire Persian Empire and most of the Mediterranean world, uniting virtually all the world's Jews in a single state. It gave them legal and religious respectability, economic and social freedoms, and linguistic and cultural conditions that made possible a major renaissance of Judaism and the Jews. The significance of Islam for Jewry has been interpreted very variously. Interesting combination of words there. Since the Middle Ages, and is a source of controversy to this day. David J. Wasserstein is Eugene Greener Jr., Professor of Jewish Studies, Professor of History, and Professor of Classics at Vanderbilt University. I'm sorry, I do not know what state Vanderbilt University is in. Or for that matter, if it's even in the USA. He received his PhD. He received his Doctor of Philosophy from Oxford University. I know that's in England. His research interests include medieval Islamic history, medieval Jewish studies, Islam in Spain, Islamic numismatics, and minorities in the Islamic world. Professor Wasserstein is also interested in the classical tradition of Islam, and in particular in the ways in which Judaism, Islam, and the classical world intersect culturally, linguistically, and politically. Mr. Wasserstein is the author of numerous scholarly articles, as well as The Rise and Fall of the Party Kings, Politics and Society in Islamic Spain, from the year 1002 to 1086, published 1985. The Caliphate in the West, an Islamic Political Institution in the Iberian Peninsula, published 1993. And The Legend of the Septuagint, From Classical Antiquity to Today, written with A. Wasserstein, published 2006. Follow the Mediterranean Studies on Facebook. This talk is co-sponsored by the Sohab and Sarah Abbasi Program in Islamic Studies, the Taub Center for Jewish Studies, the Stanford Humanities Center, the Center for Medieval Studies, and the Department of History. Again, this will take place. Mr. Wasserstein's talk will take place at 12:15 p.m., Friday, October 12, at Stanford University, which is located at 616 Sarah Street, Encina Hall West. Encina Hall West, room 208. This information was passed along by a Kimberly Ambayi, Program Coordinator, Mediterranean Studies Forum, Stanford University, 216 Encina Hall West, Stanford, California. Let's see. I'll P and F. I have two phone numbers here. Unfortunately, I don't have any websites or email addresses for you to get information, but I have two phone numbers. Listed as a P in parentheses, area code 650-725-9098, and listed as an F, 650-723-3010. I thought I'd begin today's program with that rather different piece of information about Palestine and Israel, and obviously not directly related to Palestine and Israel. Again, our phone numbers here, area code 831-427-3772, or you can call me here in the studio at 469-3119. Kathy out in Massachusetts, that includes you. I know you listen to the show. You have listened to the show. I just found out since last week's show that someone out there, besides some immediate relatives, aren't listening to the show, have been prompted to. Don't just listen. Please call me, you know, particularly my old homies with the Free Gaza Movement. Don't just listen. Call in, say hi. Let me know that you are listening. Tell me the latest, and I'll tell you something here. It's 19 minutes past 4 o'clock. Last Friday, October 5th, special to the Mercury News, that's San Jose, California, Mercury News, the big city's big newspaper. Angela Davis, dismissal of Palestinians is reminiscent of Jim Crow days. Angela Davis, as you may recall, was roughly around the year 1970 in the news, in California in particular, did make national news, the fact that she is a Marxist and probably American Communist Party member was booted off the University of California faculty for her political beliefs and her political bent. Big news. She's still alive. She's still active. Okay. Here's the article from last Friday's Mercury News. The controversy generated by Newt Gingrich's outrageous statement last year that Palestinians are, quote, an invented people, end quote, should have led to greater caution in the formation of politicians' public statements on Israel and Palestine. However, this seems not to have been the case. Mitt Romney recently offered the judgment that, quote, Palestinians have no interest in peace, as if you were making an uncontested factual observation. This was the moral equivalent of saying that African Americans were never interested in ending Jim Crow, or that black South Africans did not want to see apartheid dismantled. It is revealing that Romney proposed this characterization of Palestinians' political stance in the same speech at a fundraiser among the ultra-wealthy in Florida, in which he insisted that 47% of the people in this country believe that they are entitled to government assistance and do not want to, quote, take personal responsibility and care for their lives. It's always amazed me that this speech that was given in the dining room of someone's personal home was recorded at all by anyone who had the courage to release the recording. It was also at least partly on video. I mean, this was a bunch of Republicans meeting in someone's personal home in Florida. Amazing. Back to the article. The convergence of backward positions regarding governmental guarantees of universal availability of food, health care, housing, and other necessities, and retrograde policies on settler colonialism practiced by Israel might be expected. But the Democratic Party scarcely fares better when it comes to Israel and Palestine. At its recent national convention, the party leadership chose to disregard voting preferences of delegates by passing a two-thirds voice vote, despite the fact that the convention's oral response clearly indicated otherwise. I saw it myself. She's right. asserting that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. Such flagrantly undemocratic behavior summons up such past moments in convention history as the conduct toward Fannie Lou Hamer, that's probably Fannie Lou Hamer, and the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party in 1964. In my home state of California, Angela Davis writes on, elected officials have gone so far as to encourage the violation of First Amendment rights in order to control opposition to Israel, largely in response to University of California student support of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign against Israel. State legislators recently passed an assembly bill, that's H.R. 35, that while non-binding, calls upon campus authorities to restrict student activism that is critical of Israel. Such desperate measures implicitly proclaim that curbing criticism of Israel is more important than safeguarding constitutional rights. Perhaps those who support these measures fear the increasingly widespread use of the, quote, apartheid label to describe Israel, employed not only by students, but also by such prominent figures as President Jimmy Carter and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Making sure my proper telephone lights are on here. Don't forget, you can interrupt me at any time, hostile or friendly, whatever the nature of your call, or neutral. Continuing, if they fear the emergence of a new anti-apartheid movement, this time directed against Israel, they may very well be correct. The BDS movement, boycott, divestiture, and sanction, is rapidly gaining support. This past spring, the 8th annual Israeli Apartheid Week was observed on campuses in South Africa and throughout Europe, North America, and the Arab world. Shortly after the passage of California Assembly Bill H.R. 35, the University of California Student Association passed a strong resolution that not only opposed H.R. 35, but recognized, quote, the legitimacy of boycotts and divestment as important social movement tools, end quote, and encouraged, quote, all institutions of higher learning to cleanse their investment profiles of unethical investment in companies implicated in or profiting from violations of international human rights law without making special exemptions for any country, end quote. Almost done here. Angela Davis's article in the Mercury News, San Jose Mercury News, last week. We here in the United States should be especially conscious of the similarities between historical Jim Crow practices and contemporary regimes of segregation in occupied Palestine. If we have learned the most important lesson promulgated by Dr. Martin Luther King, that justice is always indivisible, it should be clear that a mass movement in solidarity with Palestinian freedom is long overdue. End of article. Angela Davis is Distinguished Professor Emerita, University of California, Santa Cruz, and a member of the jury for the 2012 Russell Tribunal on Palestine. She wrote this for the Mercury News newspaper. Copyright 2012, all rights reserved. Now, my take on this article. Just checking the time there. Yeah, we've all heard over and over about Newt Gingrich's declaration that Palestinians are an invented people, as though they were never there to begin with, as though most of them hadn't lived there for hundreds of years, for countless generations. Regardless of what they may have called themselves, they were in Palestine, and at least in that sense, were Palestinians. Um, Yeah, I mentioned the my amazement that someone at Romney's little fundraising party would covertly record his comments and then release them to the world. That is a real hero in my book, whoever he or she was. The convergence of backward positions regarding governmental guarantees of universal availability of food, healthcare, housing, and other necessities. Most generally, Ms. Davis is referring to the clause, introductory clause, in the beginning of the U.S. Constitution to provide for the general welfare. In the paragraph which talks about to provide for the common defense, promote general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, and there are other less nebulous guarantees in American political tradition that justify guaranteeing universal availability of food, health care, housing, etc. Retrograde policies on settler colonialism practiced by Israel. At this stage in Israel's over 60-year history, she may be referring explicitly to Israel's support for the frontier settlers who are illegally camped and flourishing and growing in occupied Palestinian land, stealing Palestinian land. But settler colonialism is, in fact, the basis, the historical fact of modern-day Israel's establishment and current existence. Settler colonialism was how Israel got started. Yeah, that Assembly Bill H.R. 35 is a real booger, isn't it? I've read somewhere in this pile, I won't dig for it now, the bill, non-binding bill, still, regardless of the fact that it's non-binding, has amazingly been signed into non-binding law, whatever exactly that is, in spite of the fact that it has very specific condemnations of certain behaviors, such as, I remember one of them is, any talk on university campuses or other major institutions in the state of California declaring or alluding to the fact that Israel has and does commit ethnic cleansing. In other words, they don't even want people to talk about that, to examine it, to study it. This would be inside the classrooms, too, not just extracurricular activity outside the classroom. Things like that. Outrageous. Okay, we're down to 4:32 p.m. PDT. Please call me at 427-3772 or 469-3119. I sent out a bunch of letters to what I presume are the four major synagogues, temples, Jewish temples, in Santa Cruz County, announcing the fact that I have the program. And if any of you out there heard about the program through that letter, I welcome you to the show. And I would welcome you even more if you called in, regardless of what you have to say. Let's make a dialogue out of this so I'm not just preaching to people over the airwaves and over the internet. Last week I announced that I would do some looking into the textbook situation for little Palestinian children and little Israeli children. What the curriculum is saying about the other people, what little Jewish children in Israel and what the settlers, Jewish settlers, are learning about Arabs, Palestinian Arabs, and what the Palestinians are being taught about the Israeli Jews. Well, I have one article here addressing one side of that. This is taken from The Observer. Actually, I copied it off of the Guardian UK website, but it says here The Observer. I'm not sure what the relationship is with The Guardian. Saturday, 6 August 2011. A good 14-month-old article, but it's not very old at all. Entitled, Academic Claims Israeli School Textbooks Contain Bias. Nurit Peled Elhanan of Hebrew University says textbooks depict Palestinians as, quote, terrorists, refugees, and primitive farmers, end quote. An Israeli academic is claiming that Israeli schools are racist. Nurit Peled Elhanan, an Israeli academic, mother, and political radical, summons up an image of rows of Jewish school children bent over their books, learning about their neighbors, the Palestinians. But, she says, they are never referred to as Palestinians unless the context is terrorism. They are called Arabs. Quote, the Arab with a camel in an Alibaba dress. They describe them as vile and deviant and criminal. People who don't pay taxes, people who live off the state, people who don't want to develop, she says. She continues, the only representation is as refugees, primitive farmers, and terrorists. You never see a Palestinian child or doctor or teacher or engineer or modern farmer. Peled Elhanan, a professor of language and education at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, has studied the content of Israeli school books for the past 5 years. In her account, Palestine and Israeli School Books, Ideology and Propaganda in Education, is to be published in the UK this month. That would be August of last year. She describes what she found as racism, but more than that, a racism that prepares young Israelis for their compulsory military service. People don't really know what their children are reading in textbooks, she said. One question that bothers many people is, how do you explain the cruel behavior of Israeli soldiers towards Palestinians and indifference to human suffering, the inflicting of suffering? People ask, how can these nice Jewish boys and girls become monsters once they put on a uniform? I think the major reason for that is education. So I wanted to see how school books represent Palestinians, end quote. In hundreds and hundreds of books, she claims she did not find one photograph that depicted an Arab as a quote-unquote normal person. The most important finding in the books she studied, all authorized by the Ministry of Education, concern the hysterical narrative of events in 1948, the year in which Israel fought a war to establish itself as an independent state, and hundreds of thousands of Palestinians fled the ensuing conflict. The killing of Palestinians is depicted as something that was necessary for the survival of the nascent Jewish state, she claims. It's not that the massacres are denied. This is in quotations. It's not that the massacres are denied. They are represented in Israeli school books as something that in the long run was good for the Jewish state. For example, Deir Yassin, a pre-1948 Palestinian village close to Jerusalem, was a terrible slaughter by Israeli soldiers. In school books, they tell you that this massacre initiated the massive flight of Arabs from Israel and enabled the establishment of a Jewish state with a Jewish majority. So it was for the best. Maybe it was unfortunate, but in the long run, the consequences for us were good. End quote. This astonishes me that the school books would actually admit that much truth about the May 1948 war. As she says, in school books, they tell you that this massacre initiated the massive flight of Arabs from Israel and enabled the establishment of a Jewish state with the Jewish majority. Continuing, children, she says, grow up to serve in the army and internalize the message that Palestinians are, quote, people whose life is dispensable with impunity. And not only that, but people whose number has to be diminished, end quote. Peled Elhanan approaches her subject from a radical political background. She is the daughter of a famous general, Mati Peled, who became convinced that Israel's future lay in a dignified peace with the Palestinians. After leaving the army, he became active in the peace movement. A former Israeli general, hero of the 1967 war. I threw that in. Continuing, when Peled Elhanan's only daughter, Smadar, was 2 years old, her face appeared on billboards in a political poster for labor, the Labor Party. His message was that all children deserve a better future. Then, in 1997, Smadar was killed by a Palestinian suicide bomber while shopping in Jerusalem. She was 13. Peled Elhanan declines to talk about her daughter's death apart from once or twice referring to the tragedy. At the time, she said that it would strengthen her belief that without a settlement to the conflict and peaceful coexistence with Palestinians, more children would die. Quote, terrorist attacks like this are the direct consequence of the oppression, slavery, humiliation, and state of siege imposed on the Palestinians, end quote, she told TV reporters in the aftermath of Smadar's death. This is an Israeli woman talking now. A university professor. Speaking of oppression, slavery, humiliation, and state of siege imposed by Israel on the Palestinians. Continuing, her radical views have exacted a professional cost. University professors stopped inviting me to conferences. And when I do speak, the most common reaction is, you are anti-Zionist. End quote. Anybody who challenges the dominant narrative in today's Israel, she says, is similarly accused. And I might add, if they call her anti-Zionist, probably because she is a Jew. Of course, any non-Jew who says this stuff, according to my experience, is immediately and automatically labeled anti-Semitic. Continuing, she hopes her book will be published in Hebrew, but is resigned to it being dismissed by many in the political mainstream. Asked if Palestinian school books also reflect a certain dogma, Peled Elhanan claims that they distinguish between Zionists and Jews. Quote, they make this distinction all the time. They are against Zionists, not against Jews. But she concedes that teaching about the Holocaust in Palestinian schools is, quote, a problem, an issue. Some Palestinian teachers refuse to teach the Holocaust as long as Israelis don't teach the Nakba, the Palestinian catastrophe of 1948, end quote. Perhaps not surprisingly for someone of such radical views, Peled Elhanan is deeply pessimistic about her country's future. Change, she says, will only come, quote, when the Americans stop providing us with $1 million a day to maintain this regime of occupation and racism and supremacy, end quote. I might add that specifically the amount from the U.S. government, hence from the U.S. taxpayer, is roughly $3 billion a year, promised over a 10-year period. That's the current rate. That's $3 billion with a B. Continuing, she said that within Israel, quote, I only see the path to fascism. You have 5.5 million Palestinians controlled by Israel who live in a horrible apartheid with no civil and no human rights. And you have the other half who are Jews who are also losing their rights by the minute. End quote, she says, in reference to a series of attempts to restrict Israelis' right to protest and criticize their government. She dismisses the Israeli left as always small and timid, but especially now, quote, there has never been a real left in this country, Israel, end quote. She believes that the education system helps to perpetuate an unjust, undemocratic, and unsustainable state. She says, everything they do, from kindergarten to 12th grade, they are fed in all kinds of ways, through literature and songs and holidays and recreation, with these chauvinistic patriotic notions. And this article was amended. Well, for those who may happen to be familiar with the article, you'll know what I'm talking about. This article was amended on 7 and 8 August 2011. The original article credited Mati Peled, Miss Alhanan's father, as the designer of a poster featuring Nurit Peled Alhanan's daughter, Smadar. This was corrected to read that the family produced the poster. This, in turn, is incorrect and has been corrected at the request of the family. End of article. Academic claims Israeli school textbooks contain bias. Now for my take. I am used to hearing in recent years how Palestinian school children are taught to hate the Jews, to take Palestine back from them and drive them into the sea, that Palestinian children are taught with their school curriculum very nasty things about the occupiers, the Israelis, the Zionists. And perhaps there are some truths to that. More lately, I have reason to believe that there has been a reversal in this textual philosophy, and that those books are disappearing if they are not completely gone from Palestinian schools anyway. But she does, in her article, Ms. Peled Elhanan does point out that, as she says, asked if Palestinian school books also reflect a certain dogma, Peled Elhanan claims that they distinguish between Zionists and Jews. They make this distinction all the time. They are against Zionists, not against Jews. Of course, there are a considerable number of Israelis and American Jews, whether or not they consider themselves to be Israelis, who having a senior moment here, yes, who do not make, will not make a distinction between being a true Zionist and being a true Jew. And then there are other Jews who very responsibly take the position that this is not a good stance for the Jewish faith and the Jewish people to make such a hard and fast joining of the two philosophies. It undermines the ethical nature of the Jewish tradition and Jewish teachings. But how would I know? I'm a Christian Arab, right? A Christian Palestinian. Incidentally, I grew up in the Lutheran tradition, which was brought over here by my father from Jerusalem. He was raised as a Lutheran himself in Palestine. Some out there who may or may not be listening to the show will call me an anti-Semite no matter what I say or do. Whoops, wrong button. Am I an anti-Semite? You've got 6 minutes to call in and tell me that if that's the case. I mean, if it's the case that you believe that. Oh, I did send in a letter to the editor via email to the San Jose Mercury News. In my rush to leave the house today, I neglected to make a copy of it. But my letter said, in essence, while the things Angela Davis says, taken individually, are not exactly new at this point in time, I still appreciate how concisely she ties the loose ends all together and presents to us, or rather addresses, circumstances that contain a double standard, are hypocritical, and to allow the worst of history to repeat itself. Now it's up to we the people, I continued to write my letter to the editor, up to we the people to educate ourselves and keep tabs on our elected public servants. There's 5 minutes left in Mideast Madness. I have to be very careful when I state the name of the show. I caught myself in recordings. One of those times I caught myself listening to the echo of what I said in my head. I didn't have to listen to a recording. I called the show Military Madness. For some reason, it was easier for me to say that on the air, and it just came out like that. Military Madness. No, this is Mideast Madness, as in Middle East Madness. When I started this show earlier this year, just a few months ago, I began by entitling this 55-minute program, Don't Beat Me Up. Don't Beat Me Up was the original name. That really has to do with my affiliation with the Resource Center for Nonviolence. But then I got real and realized I was going to have to call it what it is, so I don't confuse people, and so I don't sound like a schoolyard wimp every time I pronounce the name. Don't Beat Me Up. This is Mideast Madness. See, I almost did it again. I almost said Military Madness again. Oh, I don't know why. Mideast Madness. Why does this not open? I'm trying to get my darn compact disc out of the thing. Let's see if I am on the air. Am I on the air? I'm live on the internet.
I'm live on the internet.
Okay, we're working. Whoever's out there has been hearing every word that I've said. If you haven't gotten up, run to the bathroom. There we go. I won't have to wait a week and then come back and find the CD tray empty. Again, that lovely music you heard, that Oud music, was presented as track number 12 in a 14-track CD entitled The Music of Arab Americans, a Retrospective Collection. This track happened to be feature a Palestinian, too. They also talk about Syrian Americans and Lebanese Americans and Egyptian Americans, etc. Well, again, if my past week's efforts to communicate with the Jewish people through the postal mail, through snail mail, was my invite to listen to the program bore any fruit, you are very welcome. This evening, this afternoon, and certainly welcome and desire to return next week when we do Mideast Madness. just to be on the safe side, if you had, obviously you've gotten your pens, pencils, and parchment by this point in time, copy down those phone numbers again. The studio number, phone numbers, directly to Free Radio Santa Cruz Studio here in Santa Cruz County is area code, for both numbers, area code 831-427-3772. And, I should say, or, the second line, 469-3119. Also area code 831. Today we talked about how Islam saved the Jews. Actually, a short abstract of David Wasserman's upcoming talk on Friday, October 12th at Stanford University, How Islam Saved the Jews. I read Angela Davis's very recent article in the San Jose Big City newspaper entitled Dismissal of Palestinians as Reminiscent of Jim Crow Days, in which she blames both the Republicans and the Democrats for giving minimal lip service and disparaging remarks to Palestinians, assuming they really do exist. We also talk about the daughter of a great Israeli general who underwent an epiphany and realized that respect and due process towards and for Palestinians by Israel is the only true path to peace in Palestine, in Israel and Palestine. Fascinating article. Tune in next week at 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time for Mideast Madness. This is Rent Wheel signing off. Thank you very much. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, streaming live at freakradio.org.